Welcome, listeners, to another bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. Today we have with us an author, librarian coordinator, very exciting guest, Caroline Ackervig. Welcome to our program.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Yay, we're very excited to have you. So let's dive right in. So what came first, being a librarian or being an author?
Well, actually, I always wanted to write. You know, I'm one of those people who grew up wanting to be an author from the time I read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe as like a 12-year-old or 10-year-old. Wow. And then couldn't get published in children's fiction, just struck out left and right. And so about 10 years ago, I decided, you know what, I read a lot of romance. I'm going to try to write a romance novel. And I wrote a romance novel, submitted it many places, and eventually it was picked up by a small indie press that is now, doesn't exist anymore, but it was called Whiskey Creek Press. And they released my first story. And so that was how it all began.
Wow. So did you take, that you always wanted to be a writer, did you specifically, in any of your schooling, do stuff toward writing or not necessarily?
No, actually, my earlier career was I trained horses for many years.
Oh, wow.
And then I had kind of an unfortunate accident, and my husband was like, this is not a healthy, I couldn't physically continue to do that job. So actually, wow. When my kids were young, I returned to school and got licensed as an English teacher. And then I had always been passionate about librarians, so I decided to get certified as a school librarian also.
Oh, wow. Are you one of those kids who's like spent your whole
yeah.
childhood in the library?
Yeah. I wanted to, I had little areas where you could go back and, rather than go out for recess and lie down and read a good book. So yes, I loved libraries. And I think libraries are really important for kids because they're a space where kids have choice and power, which isn't always the case in schools.
Right. Wow. You're saying because in choosing what they can read or choosing where their imagination
can
go?
It's a place where any school library or even any public library is a place where kids are empowered users. And so I think that that's really important. They're safe places where kids can explore who they are and find out what they're passionate about. So I've always felt that libraries serve an important mission as both an author, as a library user, and as a reader.
Wow. That's so, wow. So you worked as a school librarian or you worked in a public library?
I did. I worked in a school library for many years. And now I'm a library coordinator for a district in Western Wisconsin.
What's a library coordinator?
A library coordinator manages and runs all the libraries. So that's my job now. So unfortunately, it keeps me out of libraries and I don't get to work with kids as much anymore. It's more administrative, but at the same time, I do love working with librarians and we can do a lot of outreach. Like we have a lot of book giveaways. We do a lot of community stuff too. So yeah, I mean, there are bonuses and negatives to the job, but I'm still passionate about it. So.
Wow. And as a school librarian, were you working with the teachers or like what's your biggest thing that you think for a school librarian?
Okay, so school librarians, I'm sorry, you're gonna hear a lot about libraries here.
That's great. We want people to hear about libraries. We'll talk about your books later. Yeah.
School librarians in Wisconsin, we promote literacy, we teach research skills, and we teach digital citizenship, which is how to be safe online, which is an important skill for anyone to learn.
Yes.
So they're kind of a jack of all trades in a building. So they provide professional development for the teachers and they work with all of the students in the building. So it's a very unique and special job. You get to know all the kids in your buildings.
That's great. And what does it mean? What do you say? Digital citizenship? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's basically, how to be safe online, which is a big thing for our grownups to learn and also our kids who are essentially digital natives, which means they're growing up with access that we never had to deal with.
Yep.
And they're dealing, I mean, you know, the internet's the wild, wild west.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
These kids have to learn pretty young how to stay safe and make good choices because, you know, to be honest, in most cases, parents didn't have to deal with these things. They aren't always equipped to help their kids navigate this world.
That's so true. So it's not just, it's a two-part in not just like where, like what you should be visiting, but also who you should be interacting with. all that kind of
stuff. Exactly. Yeah. Who you should be interacting with, what information you don't want to give anyone,
right.
kind of thing. You know, I mean, that's, you know, you think about it. I mean, I don't know about you, but I get at least 2 or 3 phone calls a week from someone trying to scam me on something. I think about the elderly people. So many people in our society need better skills to be safe and, you know, evaluate what is a scam.
Well, so that's what libraries have really, they've had to expand their, but I guess it's not because the internet is the new source of information. So I guess it's, it's just including that now. Wow.
Yeah, libraries are kind of, you know, forgive me for using the word, it's overused, but reimagined. Libraries aren't places with dusty, you know, stacks of books. I will admit, I tend to be a digital reader. You know, I mean, I think many of us are.
Right.
And libraries have evolved to be instead. I mean, otherwise things go extinct, right? They have to evolve and change in order to stay vital.
That's so true. And they are vital, so we have to keep them vital.
Yep.
Wow. Wow. So going over now, we'll switch over now to talk some about your books. Because you got, you really have 2 sets of books to speak about, right? You have your all your romance books, which you said you write under a pen name. So why did you choose to write those under a pen name?
Okay. Well, because I work in schools with children and I didn't want to be Googled under my name and have a problem with a parent. So yeah, I wrote my steamier or my red satin romance under my pen name, which is Isabel Kane. And then I write my children's books up through new adult, which the books that I'm comfortable with my mother-in-law reading are my own name. So that's usually the evaluation I do.
Right.
Would I be okay with my mother-in-law reading it? And if I am, then it can go under my own name.
Oh, are you still writing romances or you've moved away from that?
Yes. Oh, actually, my most recent release is a romance, but it's a sweet romance. It's, what is it, white satin romance. And so that one I debated and actually I discussed it with the publisher because it does technically fall into the adult romance category.
Right.
But then I thought, you know, I am a Hallmark movie watcher. I'm a Lifetime movie watcher. And there are a lot of people who are the same. And that story, which is called Christmas Come Back to Me, that falls kind of into that soft romance category. And so I wanted it under my own name.
Right. And you were calling it white satin romance versus red satin romance?
Yes, white. Well, yeah. That's the designation my publisher uses. So, yeah. And also it is, I've seen it used, yes. So if it's you know, ends in a kiss kind of approach, then it's more of a white satin romance and it's more repartee between the two main characters and it's flirtation, but there's not much physical. That's more of a white satin. Pink satin's getting a little steamier and red satin is steamy kind of heading into erotica.
Oh, so these are even before erotica. Erotica is already the next level of all these.
Well, I mean, it depends what you call erotica.
Right.
You know, that's very, I think that is, you know, each person has to evaluate what is erotica for them. But I mean, if you have, I think for me, the definition is if there's clear graphic sex, then I would put it into, you know, red satin or erotica, crossing that line.
Right. So it's interesting because even as you're writing these books as a librarian, are you very much keeping your, you know, the kids or the students away from these sort of books? Because like you can't even write it under your name. Or did you have some sort of like personal designation of like, okay, once they hit this age, then I don't care if they know about this anymore or whatever, or not necessarily.
Librarians are not by definition censors, okay?
Right, okay.
Our whole deal is access. But at the same time, if you work in a school, you have an obligation to respect what the parents want.
Right.
So even in the high schools, we do have, because obviously you're serving a population of up to 18 there.
Right.
18-year-olds. You know, we don't have straight up erotica,
right,
but we do have books with, consensual sex, things like that in it. So I guess I don't steer anyone away from anything, but at the same time, when you work in school libraries as opposed to public libraries, you do have to be sensitive to the age of the students and provide developmentally appropriate stuff. So I don't steer anyone away from anything, but I respect the boundaries for minors that parents place upon them.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good. That's a very good way to describe it. I've had I've spoken to a school librarian before who said she's kind of frustrated that that there's like these arbitrary lines that are sometimes drawn, that in romance, anything past a certain point is just taboo and no. But when all of a sudden if it comes, and language, but all of a sudden if it comes to violence, like almost any level of violence is allowed.
Oh, that's true. But that's true with movies too, if you think about it.
Right.
Any kind of violence is acceptable in R-rated, but sex is not, or nudity is not. So, I mean, that's just a truth of American society. You know, I mean, that's, violence is for some reason acceptable, but, I'm not making a political statement. I mean, I guess just that's what you see in film.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more widely accepted. So, yeah. That's just what it is. As a reader, I have very eclectic taste, so I don't draw lines in my own mind. If I like a book, I'll read it. Doesn't matter what genre it is for me. And as a writer, that's a little bit of a problem.
Right.
Because a publisher wants you to stay within one genre. And in terms of marketing, it's much better to be producing the same kinds of books. And that I have not done. I have been all over the place. Like, I have horror stories, I have children's books, and then I have new adult. I write what I'm excited about and what I feel like writing, which may not be the best professional decision, but it's what I like to do. So,
right. It's almost like a typecasting for an author, because then your readers know that this is what they can get from you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I buy authors I know. Like, I know I like this author, and I'm probably going to like more books by he or she.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely. And that makes sense. But I haven't deliberately chosen to do that.
Yeah, well, because like you said, you can only write what you're excited about.
Yeah, exactly. And that could vary. So
yeah, depends on the day, depends on the year, depends on you've been involved with
exactly.
Recently.
What's going on? Exactly.
Yeah, totally. So. Yeah. So how did you come up with your pen name? Like,
how do you come up with?
How did you come up with yours? Yeah.
Okay. How I came up with mine? Well, my middle name is Isabel, and I'd always liked the name Isabel. I thought it was a very pretty name. And I liked it. My great-grandmother's name was Isabel. And then I went with another ancestor's last name, the last name of Cain. And I thought it just sounded kind of classy. So I went with that. I liked it.
Yeah.
It struck me right away. And so just family names, and it worked for me. So that's what I went with.
Yeah, because for me, coming up with names is like the hardest thing about writing ever.
Names are so difficult. Actually, I'm working on a book right now. And for last names, I just put dashes. Because I haven't mentally gotten around that yet. And first names are terrible. Actually, my Christmas come back to me story, I submitted to the publisher. It was accepted. And then they said, you need to change the names of your two main characters. And I was like,
No.
I was like totally good with those names. They were the names that was who they were.
Right.
And then when I changed them, I realized it was actually the right decision. So I totally agree with you. Names are tough.
So when did you make the transition, or why did you make the transition over from writing the romances to, like you're saying, more of the children's books and the YA and the NA?
Okay. Yeah. So I'd written several, I kind of go back and forth to be totally honest, but I've written some romances, and the one thing I had written that I couldn't get published was a horse story, which is based on, it's called The Horse Named Viking, which is published now.
Yeah.
Which was loosely based on experiences with horses I'd had growing up. Right. Couldn't get it published. Put it away for a couple of years. Wrote some romances. And what you learn in the writing, about the writing process through the act of getting published and through editing, and you learn what was really wrong with your writing.
Yep.
So then I went back to that book and I re-edited it and tweaked it up and changed it. And then it was published. And so then it just... I don't know about you, but as an author, I'm sure you have like two or three books tucked away in a computer or in a drawer somewhere, where if you come back to them, you can really kind of breathe new life into them and see them in a new way.
Yep.
And that's kind of what happens. So yeah, I kind of bounce around, which, it is what it is. So
that's it. That book has horses in it. Do all of your books have for the children's books?
No,
do they all have horses?
No. No, that's actually the one I'm working on now. To be perfectly honest, it's been my most successful book, my horse story. So I am working on another horse story right now. Not all of them not all of them have horse stories. Not all of them have any horses in them. I do, you know, as any writer, you use things you see, parts of your life in every part, in every one of your books. You know, like you leave, I kind of think of it as like a Horcrux from Harry Potter. You leave little bits of yourself in every book, maybe not coherent or obviously visible to everyone, but they're in there.
Right.
And so like if you visit a town, it might reappear in a subsequent novel. So I mean, I'm fortunate that I'm getting older, obviously, so I have lots of experiences I could include in my book, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's why they say writers, you got to live. Like, you can't just lock yourself away in your little cave somewhere to write. You got to actually live life to be able to write life.
Absolutely, basically. And you have to write from the heart. And, you know, sometimes a little distance in time makes an experience more clear in your own head so you can actually share it better.
Yeah, that's true. Going back to the horses for a second, do you feel like, or have you seen that horses have been, like a story about horses is kind of like its own niche almost, with like its own genre within
horse,
the genre?
Yeah, you have a built-in, with any horse story.
Yeah.
There's, I grew up in Marguerite Henry, Walter Farley, there's a built-in audience for horse stories, people who are passionate about horses. And having lived with them, you know, grown up on a horse farm, lived with horses, trained horses for so many years, it's very easy for me to tap back into that whole mindset and that whole world.
Wow.
But yeah, it's, I totally agree. There is definitely a niche unique to horse stories. Yes, absolutely.
I think that's good. It's funny because whenever they come out with new categories, sometimes it's like, oh man, I have to think of a new, like I have to remember more categories for books. But at the same time, it's like, well, this way you're targeting the reader better. So theoretically I'd want that too.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, because that's also interesting, because you said that you write NA, which is new adult, which they kind of usually say is like, over 18 or college age kind of. But I've seen that genre has seemed to have become, or right now is really hovering a lot around romance.
I totally agree. And it's interesting, like the whole Hallmark phenomenon, all of those seem to me to be kind of NA books. You know what I mean? Like just that when you look at them, they're kept sweet. They're kept light. You know, there really aren't any major issues dealt with. Like YA can deal with a lot of really caustic, challenging situations. NA kind of seems to float away from that. It's an interesting genre.
Yeah, it's almost like they made it, but they haven't really figured it out yet. And it's just kind of what ended up drifting in there, sort of.
I totally agree. It is interesting. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. So aside from the book that you have about a horse, the horse named Viking, so what are your other children's young adult books about?
Okay, so right now I have my newest release is a book called Christmas Come Back to Me, which is it's a sweet romance set in a Wisconsin winter town called Noel, or Noel as it's pronounced in the story. And I tried to capture the feeling of like Eagle River, Wisconsin, which is a small town in northern Wisconsin, and they have a snowmobile track, and they have, so there's snowmobile racing, and everyone plays ice hockey. So it really tries to capture the feeling of the town. And the main characters had a romance back in high school, and then they split up because they both had ambitions they were pursuing. It's a sports story also because the main male character, Eric the Wall Engen, was a hockey player before he had a hip injury. And so can they rekindle the flame and get together during a festival? Actually, it's the Nutcracker Festival, which is the main employer in this small town of Noel. And actually, I had a lot of fun writing that book because I was writing it. This is sad, but my brother had just passed.
Oh, man.
And I was struggling. I was really struggling. And I had actually signed a contract to write a sequel to a science fiction novel. My science fiction novel, which came out a couple years ago, is called Halcyon. And I had agreed to write a sequel to it, and I couldn't do it. I needed a little Christmas early that year. So it was how do you even pronounce it? I'm terrible on that. So I decided in the month of November I was going to write a book, and I did.
Oh, wow.
So, and then it took 2 years of editing to get it finished. I wrote it. So then my other books, let's see, I have another sweet romance, YA, which is called Summer Snow. And Summer Snow is like that dandelion fuzz that floats in the wind in the summer.
Yeah.
And so that's another sweet story. I really liked that one. That was a fun one to write. And then, let's see, I have Calvin the Cookie Maker, which was actually a children's story that came out. And that's actually just recently gone out of print. And then Halcyon, which is science fiction. And then my Isabel Cain novels, I have, One Last Farewell, Calypso Secrets, which is set in the Florida Keys. I had a lot of fun writing that one. And Eagle River, which is actually a different, I just like the town's name. It was perfect.
Yeah.
And that's an NA novel, but that was another fun one to write.
Have you gotten around to writing the sequel yet
Halcyon?
Yeah, Halcyon.
And I totally, because you know, like the problem with science fiction is you have to develop an understanding of the technology you use in the book, right?
Yep.
So actually I'd co-written that with my sister, and it's one of several stories I've co-written with my sister. And we had spent so much time working out the science of the technology of how this society was going to work.
Right.
It's an alternate universe. And they're traveling back and forth between Earth and this alternate universe called Halcyon, where they've achieved perfect peace and happiness.
Wow.
And we developed this whole thing. And the problem is I don't remember all the details well enough, so I have to like reread the book to re-understand what we were doing. And I haven't gotten there. It seems like a lot of work to kind of get into that. Because once you step away from it, I'm sure you've had the same experience. Like a book gains a life of its own.
Yep.
And a reader interacts with it differently than the author does.
Yep.
And so, I have to like, no, I never, I totally dropped the ball on that one. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's also because as you're writing it and editing it, you're so involved in the world. And it's almost like cramming before a test that when you walk away from it, you remove it from your mind because you're on to the next thing that you have to fully immerse yourself in. So,
exactly. And so I haven't been able, and then the other problem is I need my sister to immerse herself too, because this is one we wrote together.
Right.
And, which is interesting. She lives in San Francisco. And so we wrote this totally talking and, you know, sharing Google Docs and, you know, working it through that way.
Right.
And which was really an interesting experience. But it actually makes the writing process a lot longer working with someone, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It was super fun, though.
Yeah. Like, how does that, did that do anything for good or for not good to your relationship with your sister that you're like, what are you writing? Or listen to my idea.
What we both realized was that we have certain tendencies as authors that come through. And then she'll call me and be like, what, Caroline? I mean, where were you going with this? Because also, I am 10 years older than she is.
Oh,
and so we have kind of different viewpoints on things. She's like, no, that's not right. And so, and then I'll notice that she has certain techniques or practices as a writer. And I'll be kind of like, we need to pull away from that. So it is different. The voice ends up being very different when it's two people working together as opposed to one.
Did you ever pull rank on her as the older sister to say, I know we're not agreeing about this, but this is the way we're doing it because I'm the older sister?
Well, you see, I had more time to work on it than she did. Or maybe she just, so I did more of the proofreading, the final proofreading. So then, you know what? If you're doing the proofreading, you're going to make the final calls.
That's true. So. You're like, however you work at the partnership, make sure you do the final proofread.
Yeah, exactly. You get the final call on things. So, yeah.
Is your sister an author with her own line of books and stuff like that? Or she just wanted to write the book? You guys just thought to write the book together?
Well, we actually had written, she doesn't write alone. We'd written some short romances, some short stories that were in anthologies together.
Ah, okay.
And we'd actually had a lot of fun. Like we wrote a St. Patrick's Day one, The Mists of Connemara.
Uh-huh.
And that was really fun. It was like elves, fairies, and that was really fun.
Yeah.
And then we'd written a couple others together. We'd never done full length fiction. And I really don't know. My only excuse is I have eclectic reading tastes. I don't know how we settled on science fiction, but we did. And, we ended up, writing that science fiction novel together, so.
Yep, that's funny, because science fiction has always seemed, like fantasy, you could just make up a world, and, you know, whatever you decide your magic base is, that's fine, but science fiction has to be a little realistic almost.
Yeah, you have to have a scientific basis for anything that happens.
Right.
Which makes it really challenging, because then you have to do all this work to understand how or why this would, you know, so that was a lot of work. So yes, you're totally right. Until I have the time and space to like immerse myself in back in that world, the sequel's not happening. So, right. And I just felt like writing another horse story. You know, you get a bee in your bonnet about something.
Yep. Yep.
And you got to finish, you know, so, and we all have limited time. So, for writing actually. So
yeah.
I think right now my goal is to do another horse story.
Yep. And like you said, you got to be excited about what you're writing, or else it just becomes a drag.
It yeah. totally does. And then it's really hard to make yourself sit down and write.
Yeah. It's also interesting. Well, going back for a second to some of the romances you described, you're calling it sweet romance, but those are kind of also, is that the same thing that they use to describe like cozy, like a cozy romance?
Or small town romance. It's interesting when you're tagging it.
Yeah.
And whenever you're tagging a book, you know, you have to look at what, who would find this appealing. So I agree, kind of cozy romance, kind of small town romance, and that's a whole niche on its own too.
Yeah, there is something about, I don't know, people, it's almost like a comfort food, these cozy
Absolutely.
Romances. Yeah. You either see romances in like massive cities like New York, or you see like the small town romances. Do any romances take place in just like a middle-sized city?
I don't think so. You have to have like the quite small town or New York City, and they're like, you know, they're going to go see the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree or something. It's one of the two. You're 100% right. They're not doing it in like a remote desert town, or even, you know, it's always like there's snow involved. There's several characteristics. Snow involved, the drinking of cocoa.
Yeah.
And things like that. Just there's always like a Christmas related event happening in the town.
That's true. That's very odd. That's so true. Like, I don't even read a lot of romances, but just seeing the books that are out there and you read the description of it, you're like, okay, like that's the setting. There are very few other settings.
Yep. But the truth is, there's nothing wrong with it, because, like, you know, particularly this year,
yeah,
when everything's so psychologically difficult for everyone,
yep,
and life is so hard,
yep,
people need a break.
Yep.
They need a
yep.
happy, upbeat story.
Is that something that you try for all your stories, to give some sort of optimistic, upbeat sort of ending? Or did you ever think of writing one where everybody breaks up at the end and everything's just terrible?
Well, I think an ending can be... I think an ending can be sad, but it has to be hopeful. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like,
yes,
I think
yes.
you can have a sad ending.
Yep.
And I've written sad endings, but it can't be without any hope.
Yep.
I think that as a reader, I really struggle when a book is, it's completely hopeless at the end.
Right.
And I'm not saying I need like the candy cane sweet happy ending every time, but I do need a feeling that, that there is hope for the characters to some extent.
That's so true. Yeah. And also it has to feel like you actually wrapped up the story, I guess, also, even if it's sad. Because you have to walk away feeling like this is complete. This is complete, and, you know, you're going to take away just the feeling.
That's something I've struggled with, to be honest. And I think, like, I would agree with that. And that would be my one criticism of my one horse story, because mentally I wasn't convinced that it had to end one way, but I have heard some feedback that it should have ended that way. So I don't know. It's an interesting question.
Well, having heard that feedback, were you like, oh, I guess I could have done that, or you're still stuck on the way that you ended it?
I ended it the right way for me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
I ended it the right way for readers.
Yeah.
So, so that is, yeah, but you don't know that until you put it out there and you start reading the reviews, right?
That's so true. Yeah. I mean, officially you don't read, officially writers are never supposed to read reviews, but
yes,
I think we all kind of do.
Yeah. It's terrible. You shouldn't. I completely agree with you, because eventually you do get that, or several reviews where you're like, ooh, scorcher.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Maybe, I guess my thought is, and I don't do it very often, but occasionally maybe there's a kernel of truth that's worth being aware of.
Yeah. Well, also because we do need to get feedback on the book somehow. And you can't just get the feedback from the people who like us and are being...
Yeah.
They're not going to tell it to us straight.
Say,
so,
she likes my book. You know
yeah.
what I mean? How was my book? Oh, it was delightful, Caroline. I mean, that's not going to help me, you know?
Yeah. It's so true. And even, I'm like, obviously we don't want someone to just bash us and burn the whole thing down. And usually the reaction to that is like, well, they didn't get the book. Not that we did anything wrong, they didn't get the book. No, and it could happen. It could happen either way, but it does, That's why when someone, whenever I ask someone if they like a book, and they'll be like, oh, I'm not a writer, I can't tell you if a book's good or not. I'm like, but you're the reader. So, and not even my book, just a book in general. I'm like, you could tell me what your reaction is. And that's a real reaction, whether or not, you know, you missed it or didn't miss it, but your reaction is right. And that tells me if some, you know, if the intention got across or not, which is important for me to know, you know.
Exactly. I totally agree. And I also don't think, I don't write literary fiction. I'm not trying to be the next great American novelist. Right. I want to write things that people enjoy. And so I don't feel the need to hear that I achieve some high artistic goal.
Right.
My goal is very simple, and that's to give my readers enjoyment, some escapism, some time in another world. And so I guess that bar is much lower than trying to achieve some, you know, major philosophical artistic final effort. You know what I mean?
That's so true. That's, you're writing for the readers, not for whatever anybody else is, like, you know, not for the academics or anything like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Okay, great. Uh-huh, I'm watching the time. We're exactly at the mark now. So you're not there, even though there's more to talk about, we'll just wrap up here.
Sounds good.
So if you have a fill in the blank that I always end off with, this fill in the blank of I love it when either writers, books, series, publishers, agents, whomever do X, and I really don't like when they do X. So how would you fill in the blank for those ones?
Okay, well that's so we're going with publishers, agents. That's we're looking kind of at through that lens, correct?
Whichever one you want to do, you can write about. You can say about books or authors, however you want to fill that in.
Okay, I guess. So I've been writing for a while. It's really important for me to deal with a publishing house that has integrity and it treats their authors respectfully. And the same goes for literary agents also, because I have had very negative experiences with both, as anyone who's been in writing for a while.
Right.
And I think that, you know, when we write something, we're putting a piece of ourselves, as I've said, into our work. And so being treated disrespectfully or being taken advantage of is very difficult and very devastating for a writer. And I think it shuts a lot of people down. And the writing industry is tough right now. You know, the publishing houses have consolidated.
Yep.
There aren't a lot of indie presses anymore. And so, you know, as writers, we feel we have a story to tell. And we want to get it out there and we want to do it in a safe, supportive environment. And so, you know, as a writer, it's very important to me to deal with publishing houses and agents who have integrity and who treat people with respect.
Right. Amen. Well, and this specifically, do you just mean that, you know, a professional, that they're being professional toward you, or specifically also in regard to your
honest
story? Yeah.
No, okay. I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, I want professional editing. I want professional artwork. I want the publisher to be responsive to questions. And I want them to be honest with me about what I need to do as an author and what they're going to be, you know, providing as far as my work. So that's what I mean. I mean, I think it needs to be a very transparent relationship where people are treated fairly, you know, throughout it. I think that's really important.
Yeah, amen. So would you put, I guess you have that one answer goes on both sides then.
Yes, absolutely. Goes on both sides. For readers, you know, it's you know, any kind of bookstore or library is a smorgasbord. I mean, it's anything you want. And there's no good writing. It's what you like.
That's so true.
I think that, you know, like I struggle, I'll be completely honest. I struggle with reading novels and verse. I think novels and verse are bad? No, I think some people think they're fabulous.
Yep.
I don't get them. Graphic novels, same thing. I mean, some people love graphic novels. That's not my deal. So, I mean, I think that every book has a reader in most cases.
Yep.
And what means a lot to me is hearing that a story I wrote meant something to someone else.
Wow. Yes, especially after you've put yourself in so much into it. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Caroline. It's been great speaking with you, and I'm really glad that we were able to get you on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Esther. This was a blast. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
This was a bonus episode of Oh My Word podcast featuring author Caroline Akervik. To find out more about Caroline and her work, please visit the link in the episode notes. To keep track of Oh My Word podcast and all the great stuff we're up to, follow us on Instagram at Oh My Word podcast, or please visit eltenenbaum.com. Thanks for joining us. Catch you next time.